This is game designer and writer Kenneth Height.
And this is co-host Darcy Ross.
And that laptop will briefly contain writer and game designer Robin D. Laws.
And this is the beloved podcast, Ken and Robin Talk About Stuff.
Bandwidth brought to you by Pelgrane Press.
Live from Gen Con, the best 4 days in gaming.
In Indianapolis, ranked by Condé Nast Traveler magazine as America's fourth friendliest city.
Depending on what you ask us, stuff we might talk about in this episode include...
tabletop and adventure gaming.
Snails.
Tradecraft.
Nudibranchs.
Occultism.
Polykeets.
And of course, food. Well, I sure am glad President Cat greenlit the Catstronauts' mission to expand the International Space Station. I hear he signed the authorization by swatting a pen across the floor. True leadership right there.
Giant laser pointers in space? What's not to like? And even better, the space station has live stream cameras. Although, half the time it's just nose boops. Let's check how the Catstronauts are doing up there on the space station.
Oh man, there goes Waffles the pilot. He's off to see how many kibble bits can achieve orbit around his belly. A pioneer in snackodynamics, that cat.
Here comes the kitty technician, Blanket. Careful, Waffles. If he catches you clogging the air filters with crumbs again, then it's back to litter box duty for you.
Wait a second, Robin. Major Meowser just got a hair-raising transmission from HQ. Is that the new napping module on its way?
Yep, it's their first space station edition. Science Officer Pom-Pom better know what to do, or there'll be a catastrophe in 3, 2, 1.
Here she is, and she's sharpening her claws on the instruction manual. Well, it might accidentally flip to the right page with enough swiping, I guess.
Look at them working together. Waffles is keeping the station steady with his prodigious belly. Blanket is swatting at the module's fasteners like a feather toy. Pom-Pom finally found the right instructions, and Major Meowser is, napping on them? Teamwork, by golly!
Hooray for the Catstronauts!
The space station is saved!
Until the next module arrives and starts another near-catastrophe, that is.
Wow, managing your own space station with a crew of feline heroes. Now that's the life!
You know you can, Robin. The official Catstronauts board game is available now from Atlas Games. It's full of pawsome color art by the comic book's creator, Drew Brockington, and Catstronauts features cooperative play that's fun for all ages. Find out more at atlas-games.com/catstronauts.
Sounds like the Catstronauts board game is perfect for the whole family. Let's meet this stellar challenge by picking up the Catstronauts board game now!
All right. As always, this show would not be possible without the backers from our Patreon. Normally, we identify them individually, seriatim, but here, in these friendly confines, we'd like to identify all the Patreon backers who are present. So, beloved Patreon backers, please stand and receive your just acclaim. Just acclaim. We are now ready, as longtime listeners will remember, for the Nerd Trope Draw. This is from the Nerd Trope deck provided by beloved listener Caleb Tate. Robin has the Nerd deck and the Trope deck. And Robin, for legal purposes, we have never met before. Is that correct?
No, you've not met this disembodied voice. You have no idea who this disembodied voice is. And for the audience, this disembodied voice is... sad not to be there, and I would love to be able to see everybody in some future year. But I'm here nonetheless with the Nerd deck and the Trope deck, and I will now draw from the Trope deck Lincoln-Douglas debates. Lincoln-Douglas debates. And from the Nerd deck, I draw DC Comics Gorillas.
DC Comics Gorillas.
Oh.
Lincoln-Douglas debate. All right. The Lincoln-Douglas debate, as we all know, was a series of debates held across the United States during the senatorial campaign of 1858 between Abraham Lincoln and Stephen Douglas, both of Illinois, running for Senate from the state of Illinois. Stephen Douglas was a Democrat and was reluctantly in favor of slavery on the notion that he believed that it was necessary to preserve the Union, and he was a Democrat. Abraham Lincoln was a Republican, the party created to free the slaves, and held that slavery was not just unsustainable economically, but unsustainable morally. This was the burden of the debates. Lincoln, we say now, won the debates. Douglas won the election. Lincoln went on to become president during the Civil War, and 100 years later, Gorilla City was revealed by the Flash. But because the Flash travels faster than light, he travels back in time. Mm. And when he revealed Gorilla City, he revealed Gorilla City in 1858, before Grodd had become a supervillain, when Grodd was merely an ambitious politician in Gorilla City, which, as we all know, was ruled by the kindly and wise King Solovar. Grodd and Solovar, having had the vibratory barrier to Gorilla City penetrated by the Flash, immediately used the superior technology of Gorilla City to monitor the area that Flash came from, specifically Center City, which is to say the American Midwest, which is to say Illinois. And therefore, watched the Lincoln-Douglas debates in real time and decided what better way to decide who should rule Gorilla City than to have a series of debates on the topic of should humans be exterminated? Now, Grodd, of course, did not believe in full exterminationism. He believed that some humans should be kept alive to tend the banana plantations. Solovar said that that was a wishy-washy statement and that Grodd was trying to back away from the moral implications of anti-human genocide. The resulting debates stunned a watching world, beginning with the fact that here are two super intelligent gorillas having a debate, second, that they could not turn them off on their TVs or radios because they were being broadcast by the superior technical power of Gorilla City, and third, what was the part about exterminating all humans again? Can we go back to that? This is, again, the period when Nikita Khrushchev is opening the Soviet Union up. He's denounced Stalin. Khrushchev pivots to be pro-Solovar in this matter, saying that Solovar is clearly the anti-Stalinist figure and therefore sympathetic to him. America says, well, I'd like to see their chances at exterminating all humans if America stops them, but I wouldn't mind them exterminating, I don't know, Russia. And so America becomes pro-Grodd, a mistake that Alan Dulles made second only to overthrowing Mossadegh in Iran, but there we are. So the CIA is backing the Groddist forces in Central Africa. Grodd has used as an example of why all humans should be exterminated the rule of the Belgian Congo. Belgium is an American NATO ally. We have to support our NATO allies against Grodd and or Patrice Lumumba. And so we have CIA backing Congolese factionalism with the help of the Chumanzi Project run in the Yerkes Animal Laboratory in Florida. America had been working, yes, that's right, this is actual historical fact, on uplifting chimpanzees by seeing whether or not they could be trained to speak languages, and also whether or not you could maybe combine their DNA with human DNA. Wouldn't that be fun? Of course, Khrushchev cannot let the grass grow under his feet, and so he reinstates the Soviet gorilla human breeding experiments, which were also a thing held in Soviet Georgia. And so we have KGB gorillas and American Chumanzis attempting to interfere in Gorilla City as Gorilla City is attempting to take over the Belgian Congo. Meanwhile, Katanga is rebelling against the Belgian Congo for nationalist reasons. That's probably some other gorilla. Let's say Beppo the Super Monkey is involved with that. But the entire fate of the world and possibly of extirpated humanity comes down to one rogue CIA agent known as Congo Bill, a.k.a. Congorilla. You are the team of monkeys, people, and, I don't know, lions, tasked by Congorilla to stop the Soviet-backed overthrow of the Congo, but also stop Solovar from genociding humans with superior Gorilla City technology. It seems like quite the needle to thread, and it would be bad enough were you not opposed by Buona Beast, who, of course, has allied himself, as has Monsieur Mala, with the left-wing Maoist Third World Liberation Forces in Africa. A tough nut to crack, even without the proportional jaw strength of a chimpanzee.
See, their problem is you don't want to do this with vertebrates, okay? And mammals, to boot, it takes so long for mammals to grow, and you really want to get into invertebrates. Just make them big. That's where they went wrong. I thought all of this would have been resolved very quickly had you gone with genetically engineered invertebrates.
If there had been a invisible city of octopuses somewhere that Aquaman found, sure. But we're
then
talking,
it's over.
Yeah. We're talking about history as it exists.
You're right.
You can't just make stuff up, Darcy. Or can you? Because now it is time for Darcy's Nerd Trope. Robin, take it away.
Oh, no. I get a Nerd Trope? Yep. Oh, terrifying.
In a sudden surprise development, the co-host, unprepared, receives her own Nerd Trope. And so the let me just riffle the card deck here and get a completely random draw.
Oh,
and
not gonna go
the
well.
Trope card is nudibranchs.
I see.
And what were the chances?
What were the chances? It seems statistically unlikely. And now the nerd card is Pikachu. Darcy, take it away.
All right. So we enter a period where the Earth has fallen under an apocalypse. Many centuries have passed, and the world is sort of growing up yet again. There are wildernesses to explore. There are isolated communities of cities and villages, all with their own infrastructure. And what is really powering the humanity's ability to repopulate and explore the Earth is their symbiotic partnership with the strange, mutated creatures that are around them, right? And so there exists a whole community of folks who go out into the world, discover these wondrous mutated creations that have stepped out from the sea with their wonderful little undulating antennae and various appendages, and they have miraculous abilities. And so a group of, I guess, nudibranch hunters who are attempting to catch them all, of course, are exploring the world, reconnecting isolated populations of communities, and discovering what wonders exist out there. And of course, these, these nudimon, of course, as they call them.
The first deck sells really well.
We are later accused of false advertising, yes. but these communities are being reconnected by these groups of, nudimon catchers. I think that the adventure starts, of course, with, you know, the players determining, you know, what is their character, what are their strengths and weaknesses, what are their goals. They get to populate their first, you know, they get to go out and have their prologue adventure that is catching your first nudimon. There's probably some randomizers to their abilities, and the campaign proceeds as they continue exploring step by step, community by community, and growing their arsenal of beautifully mutated, colorful, photosynthesizing, you know, so many amazing abilities that these creatures can do. They're able to use not only in adventuring, but also in rebuilding machines, right? I can imagine that there's plenty of gastropods and invertebrates that can do really strange things with metals that no other organic being is, like, known to be able to do, really, internalizing metal and bringing it into their body. And I think that would be really lovely for recreating a strange, gelatinous new civilization that we're entering. So, yeah, that's what I got.
...1968.
Sinister influences threaten to corrupt America from within and without.
The federal government establishes a new agency for overseas covert action.
The Bureau of Narcotics and Dangerous Drugs, the BNDD.
And within it, the forces of Delta Green.
In the Borealis Connection, the new globe-spanning mega-campaign for the fall of Delta Green, You become the mythos hunting agents hidden inside the BNDD.
Play 8 linked operations.
As separate standalones.
Or linked into an epic hunt for an infamous target.
Escort a sniper carrying a death warrant for a Shan warlord.
Surveil a Saigon drug summit.
Track heroin couriers on a flight from Hong Kong to L.A.
Investigate the disappearance of an archaeologist working the Bozukepi ceremonial site.
Smash a Beirut drug deal.
ID the actors broadcasting the Necronomicon from a CIA-backed Munich radio station.
And wage the drug war amid France's May 68 riots.
Designed by Kenneth Haidt.
Written by Gareth Ryder Hanrahan.
The team that brought you the Zelazny Quartet and the Dracula dossier.
The Borellis Connection.
Gorgeously designed and horrifically illustrated by Jen McCleary.
A tale of sordid intrigue.
Cosmic horror.
And desperate action against the mythos.
Now available in Titanic hardback.
From specially cleared gaming retail stores.
And the Pelgrane Press web store.
Now also at the web store as an instantly available PDF-only purchase. Okay, now is the time where we take questions from the audience, and because I have a robustly honed sense of humorous timing, and Darcy is genuinely nice and cares about you, we will often answer the question immediately after you ask it. That is not what we want to do. What we want is to repeat the question so the audience at home can seethe in jealousy that they were not here. So if we start answering a question without repeating it, you need to say, repeat the question. So let's practice. Someone give us a question that Darcy will answer out of the goodness of her heart.
What's your favorite color?
Oh, why, I'm so glad you asked. My favorite color.
There we go. All right. I feel like you guys have a real handle on yelling at Darcy, which is
good,
mean
perfect.
Of you.
Perfect.
Who's got the first repeatable question? The question is, what is our secret to meatloaf? Mm. And one is not even a secret, I think, at this point. It's that you make the meatloaf with a mixture of meats. Mm. So you don't just have a beef meatloaf. You have, at the very least, a ground beef and ground pork meatloaf. There is, some stores have meatloaf mix, which is beef, pork, and veal, even better. And the other secret is bacon. Wrap it in bacon, my friend. That is your friend, because that way your meatloaf is self-basting. And who doesn't love a self-basting meatloaf? Darcy, do you have meatloaf secrets?
My secret is to go over to Ken's house when he's making meatloaf. That is what I recommend strongly.
Yes. Okay, next. So the question is, for the upcoming newest creepy nerd goth child, what would be a good phrase for its onesie? And let's see. Goodness, Darcy, do you have onesie slogans?
Yeah,
on the tip of your tongue?
I'm reaching for something that's in the, you know, baby's first Migo. I don't know. My little Migo.
Yeah, there's something like Migo.
Yeah.
Might not be bad, just M-E-G-O. And then, you know, what they go is really sort of going to be path dependent, I guess, on you. I think that another one might be something with like a pretty heart, and everyone's like, oh, it's a lovely heart. And then around it, you have the word telltale.
Oh,
so
very
people
cute.
Like, as they look closer, they're like, oh no, this is not going to end well. And it would be even better if there's a telltale vulture eye somewhere on it to mess with people.
There you go.
All right. Who's got another question? The question is, it was a lovely story about
yes.
the interlocutor's honeymoon, which was spent in San Juan, Puerto Rico. At the part of it was at the monument to the 500th anniversary of Columbus's arrival in the New World, which was marked by, quote, a telluric totem. And what? And what the heck is up? Well, I think that you've got a couple of things going on. First of all, if you have a telluric totem, as we know from Foucault's pendulum, the telluric energies are the key energy of the Earth. And that the goal of the Templars is to create acupuncture points that channel the key. So clearly what you have stumbled into is a Templar channeling point. And so you go away, you say, well, goodness, a Templar channeling point. What are the odds that that would be happening in Puerto Rico? But I urge you to remember that the Templars are canny. And so what you have actually stumbled onto is not an actual telluric charging point. This is making manifest that which should be hidden, or as we called it in the Nixon administration, the modified limited hangout, where they present the telluric point to you as a method of drawing Telluric investigators to it so that the Templars can run, at the very least, A-B testing to determine, you know, who gets drawn to what kind of point. But also, I suspect, to have implanted people with some sort of Templar monitoring system. I do want to mention that the Templar symbol is two knights on the same horse. So the fact that you're celebrating your honeymoon may have exposed you to specific Templar energies. I feel like you should be checked against any urge to kiss a satanic head or to hoard the wealth of France. And if you're doing either of those things, you may actually have been suffused
with... And worse before. Important.
Right, yeah, you may have been suffused with Templar energies, and you should consult your local parapsychologist. Another question. The question is, what mythos entity best represents symbolically Indiana and Indianapolis, especially if you are setting a Cthulhu campaign here? Darcy, do you have a mythos candidate for Indiana?
I am flashing back to a possible hallucination, so maybe you can correct me. My memory of, like, color out of space was sort of, I feel like there were sort of the forests and the plains. There was sort of a, you know, the house that they were in, that they were experiencing the color out of space. I just remember being kind of I can picture it as the sort of the fields and little copses of trees that I'm seeing in broader Indiana. And I feel like I could look across the plains and see a sort of eldritch orb sort of moving its way toward me. But I can't remember if that was actually the vibe of where it was set or more.
Yeah, that is the vibe. The key phrase, both for Indiana and the color out of space, is the blasted heath. The notion being that the color comes and replaces normal productive biology with an alien radioactive corrupt biology. And so I feel like saying Indianapolis is corrupt is actually, I would assume, doing Indianapolis a favor. Indianapolis wishes it was corrupt. So I say that there may indeed be a color out of space situation. Again, Indianapolis's symbol is that little crosshair, so something has hit something. Mm-hmm. My immediate vibe for Indiana is Shub-Niggurath, obviously, because it's all farms and whatnot. Mm-hmm. Shub-Niggurath is our children of the corn goddess, and that's really kind of a Nebraska-Kansas thing, but Indiana's got it as well. Mm-hmm. But for some reason, I am impelled to think Quetzal-Utaus, the treader of the dust. Ooh. The god who, when you summon him, twists your spine and ages you preternaturally. And maybe that's just because I spend my time in Indianapolis standing on the show floor. But I feel the presence of Quetzal-Utaus ever closer. And on Sunday, he is among us. Next question. The question is, what is the potential for a human-snail hybrid impelled by Humanzi and a human-gorilla hybrid? Darcy, take it away.
I think a real area of growth, a growth opportunity I've identified, I'll say, is that some gastropods have really evolved a lot of rich material evolution, right? And some of them have done so and been able to create appendages or organelles that shoot those materials out, right? So there are love darts, which is sort of a mating at a distance, which I think could offer a lot of opportunity for some people. And there are also, you know, of course, more dangerous things, you know, you could protect yourself. So I really think that, you know, gosh, it's a pain, again, given back problems given to us by convention work. Boy, if I could sort of reach out of my body with strange, you know, creations or go and grab something with a sort of hydrostatic pumped like tentacle that could reach across the room, I think that would save me a lot of effort and opportunity. Yeah, so I think that's where I would move us.
Right. Okay. For legal reasons, we have to urge people not to use their love darts without affirmative consent.
That's right. That's right.
Very important not to just love dart people who do not share your snail DNA. Yeah, I mean, I would never contradict any use of Darcy on the whole question of mollusks in general, certainly not in snails. But I would recommend those interested in snail romance to read the works of Patricia Highsmith.
Yes.
What's the name of the story where the snail is just... There are not a lot of classic horror stories where you get to say content warning snail rape.
Yep.
Anyhow, moving on, hopefully. Uh-huh. Yes. The question is about the show K-Pop Demon Hunters. I literally just heard about the show, and for a while, we were wondering, are they K-pop stars who hunt demons, or do they hunt demons that are K-pop stars, or is it both? And our theory was it had to be both, because if you find out that K-pop stars are demons, the only people you can send that can get to them would be fellow K-pop stars. And I know enough about K-pop to know that I like watching the videos when I'm in a Korean barbecue. And I know that those kids are held to ridiculous standards by their manager. I mean, Colonel Tom Parker wishes he could manage a K-pop group. So I think that if the show leans into that part of the universe, that I would avidly watch it as I would any South Korean cultural product, but I have not seen it myself. Darcy, do you know K-pop Demon Hunters?
I watched it in perhaps the most inideal context possible, which was for 2 hours. I watched this delightful movie on my little laptop in a baggage claim, which I do not recommend, but it made that time spectacular. That movie slaps. That movie has opened up such a world of just strange, completely unexplained, weird, giant tiger creatures and three-eyed magpies that are on it. Never addressed, no explanation, and I just love what it threw out there and how much I'm really hoping we'll get more, so you should definitely watch it, and I think you'd have a lot of fun.
Okay, a unsolicited, well, solicited testimonial for K-pop Demon Hunters. Everyone go watch.
In the spiral.
Four scenarios embrace the works and deaths of agents between 2016 and 2020, years called the Spiral and the Delta Green Campaign, God's Teeth.
That span of cruelty and corruption in American government seemed a bitter interregnum.
A momentary eruption of spite.
Now it stands revealed as a preparation for revelations to come.
In God's eye, a baffling disappearance leads the agents to confront the inexorable government panopticon.
They face unnatural revelations unleashed by the death of privacy.
And must survive desperate revenge beneath the sleepless skies.
In God's breath, a Delta Green friendly leaves a frantic voicemail about a Denver prisoner vomiting up an alien worm.
Your agents must identify the unnatural threat.
Trace it to its source.
Burn it out.
Just be careful of the smoke.
In God's law, a shockingly gruesome death leads the agents to a Los Angeles police gang.
It has twisted older, deeper laws towards the tired avarice of corruption.
How far do the agents go to resist the unnatural?
In God's light, the wreckage left by a mass shooter catches Delta Green's attention.
Somehow behind it, a surprising app that reaches strange places on the border between worlds.
The scenarios of God's Hunt are playable with Arc Dream Publishing's Delta Green, the role-playing game.
Play the scenarios on their own, as a cycle, or as a perfect companion to the acclaimed campaign Delta Green, God's Teeth.
Learn more about Delta Green at delta-green.com.
Yes. The question is, what classic horror creature should you recruit to be the nanny for your baby? This is when we add Darcy to the show, the energy just becomes so much nicer. For some reason.
Thanks a lot.
Let's see, classic horror nanny creature. Well, the natural answer is the mummy, because every baby needs a mummy. And also, mummies have got the bandages, so it's soft when they cradle the baby. And if the mummy gets stroppy, you can hide its canopic jars, which you can't always do with other classic horror creatures. You know, a werewolf might have good intentions, but then all of a sudden it's like, oh, that new baby smells. And suddenly, you know, infant so tender and mild, to quote the song. Darcy, do you have thoughts on classic horror baby nannies?
You know, I think that it takes a village. And so I think that, you know, I think there's no one classic monster that would provide all that a baby needs. And so I think that, you know, swimming lessons is a real, like, important aspect of many child rearing. I really think, like, Creature from the Black Lagoon, I feel like could really be patient, sort of in the still waters of the lagoon, really rearing this child through their early experiences, navigating through water. I think that would be sort of our Saturdays, right? Go over to Creature of the Black Lagoon. Yeah.
Okay. That, I hope, has answered the question, because we're running out of monsters and puns. Yes. What alien creature was MacArthur trying to summon with Operation Vulture? And Darcy, of course, knows Operation Vulture like the back of her hand. But for the others, why don't you summarize it briefly? Okay, Operation Vulture, the reason that I didn't recognize it is because I don't believe it was ever an operation. Certainly was never carried out. The operation was the proposed intervention in Vietnam after Dien Bien Phu with nuclear weapons.
Top of the mountain, yeah.
They weren't going to bomb Dien Bien Phu, they were going to bomb Hanoi.
Yeah.
And what eldritch being is he trying to summon by letting off a nuclear weapon? Well, traditionally, the nuclear weapon is the angled nuclear chaos of Azathoth. And as always, releasing Azathoth seems like a good idea when you're doing it on the other side of the world from you. But the trouble with that is that assumes Euclidean geometry stays stable.
Mm-hmm.
So this is part of the reason MacArthur gets relieved of command by Truman, is his yen to release Azathoth. Darcy, do you have more insights from your deep knowledge of the Indochina War?
You know, I think you really covered it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Yes. The question is, the movie Yesterday posits an alternate history in which everything is the same except nobody has ever heard of the Beatles. But the question is, what would the actual alternate history consequences have been if the Silver Beatles had all been mugged in Hamburg and drowned in the river and we never heard of them again, basically? Or they never met in school and never founded the band. Fine, whatever. Well, this may sound revisionist, but my take is you basically get the 60s with the Beach Boys and the Stones instead of the Beatles and the Stones. The things that were causing the British musical revolution were happening without the Beatles, right? The Kinks, the Stones, the Who, all these bands predate the Beatles performing, and the Beatles were actually the poppiest of those because they were inspired more by the Isley Brothers and Motown than they were the blues, which is the direction that most of the British invasion comes from. And so, yeah, without the Beatles, the Kinks maybe have a bigger profile, which is all to the good. You don't have the annoying Maharishi, doesn't become super popular. He stays a minor Indian guru. Certainly, even, God's sake, Brian Wilson knew better than to deal with that nonsense. So, you know, again, unpopular take, but I think that we just get a slightly different, and I would argue better 60s, because we're not doing this middle-of-the-road stuff. We're doing the really cool music. And Beach Boys have a higher profile. Birds have a higher profile. Mm-hmm. I am on record as saying the Beatles are not even the best band beginning with B in the 1960s. So perhaps Darcy has a either more conventional or even more radical take.
I lean toward there being larger evolutionary pressures that sort of lead to similar entities that fill that role, right? So I see it that way as well. My question is, and I don't know if this would be true, but this would be my question. This is what I would look up if I suddenly found myself in that world. Like, does the interest in, like, astrology and certain kinds of mysticism, I feel like there might have been a sense that, like, the Beatles popularized certain kinds of, like, visible, like, mysticism, or you know, they were bringing a lot of influences back, and I think there's a lot of attention around that, right? So do we today get a different set of, you know, pop stars who popularize certain kinds of other belief systems or, you know, mystic leanings? I'm curious if all of that has been in the mix and it's just getting repopularized by different people over time, or did they have sort of a founding effect on any of that, and would it look different today?
I mean, it is true that, like, Jimmy Page and David Bowie are into a harder-sighted occultism than Lennon and Harrison. So, yeah, I mean, maybe you get cooler metal as well. I mean, good Lord. Mm-hmm. Who can say? John Kovalik is now screaming and throwing things at the wall. Yeah. Oh.
question is. So,
someone came ready for Darcy Ross.
The question is, how would the world be different without the B-E-E-T-L-E-S? And I, you know, evidence for God, the evidence is like mounting that God loves us and God loves beetles specifically, okay? There are so delightfully many of them. They are massively diverse in appendages and color, in the you know, shapes of their wings, the colors. There are just so many beetles. God could not stop himself from creating way more beetles than are, you know, I would say other other insect patterns would suggest.
Beetles are God's Games Workshop miniatures.
They really are. Oh my gosh! Just paint another one. Another one. It's so fun. So I wonder if we would get some really strange evolutionary expansions in other groups because, you know, beetles haven't been sort of hogging all the oxygen in the room. There's sort of space for these other sort of head-butting creatures to create, you know, wild colonies all over the world in different colors and such. So I think we'd see a lot of expansion of other insect groups. And I'm not sure which they would be, though. I, for one, would advocate for stick insects. I think the whole stick insect crew is really cool. And if they could flourish to the beetle levels, I think that would be a really fascinating world.
When do we get beetles, Darcy? When do they show up evolutionarily?
They're old.
I'm hoping that we can get like a Burgess Shale creature.
Oh, gosh. I don't think they're... Well... They're old.
I mean,
so yeah.
Are beetles Cambrian?
Are foliage trees pollinated by beetles and not flying insects? I thought.
Oh, I'm not sure.
Which trees?
Oh, you're probably right. I'm not quite sure. I love that, though. Gosh.
Repeat the interjection.
The interjection is, aren't magnolia trees older than the current pollinators? And they were actually pollinated by something that predated the beetles and flying insects that pollinate them now.
Well, there were flying insects. They just
but the particular
bees,
group,
right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, flowering plants are Cenozoic. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're Cretaceous, rather. They're late.
Yep.
Yeah.
Beetles are late Carboniferous.
Late Carboniferous.
Oh, cool.
Okay. So
my
dream of the Burgess Shale has once more been shattered.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. But stick insects. I don't have a bug in this fight, I guess. These are 1,000% Darcy questions, and I'm just not alone. I'm just here to look pretty.
The British are coming! The British are coming!
In Flag Bearer Games' exciting Revolutionary War role-playing game, Nations and Cannons.
Thoroughly researched and beautifully illustrated in Nations and Cannons, you play as spies, skirmishers, and saboteurs in the battle for the future of the 13 colonies.
The new campaign guide, The American Crisis, War in the North, covers the early actions of the war with historical adventures, setting information, and a fiendish Hessian plot.
Nations and Cannons is 5e compatible and focuses on unconventional heroes from underrepresented perspectives.
Educators can get a copy of the core book for use in the classroom absolutely free.
The American Crisis is currently released as a PDF with physical pre-orders available.
Visit nationsandcannons.com to check out a free adventure chapter and the quick start guide.
Yes, in the back.
Oh, wow.
As an ignorant British person, his words not mine, although they're also my words, what is the best recommendation for one day in Chicago? And Darcy is a once-in-future Chicagoan, and I have been a lifelong Chicagoan ever since I moved there. Darcy, do you want to start us off on one day in Chicago?
Is
not watching movies at my house.
Yeah. I hate to be basic, but sometimes basic things are good. You're going to start the day at some brunch spot. I don't know if you have a preferred brunch spot.
I mean, so many possibilities. Do Right Donuts. You
mm-hmm.
could go, oh man, Whisk is gone, but there's other really great ones. Yeah.
Okay. So you're going to go to your favorite of those. You're going to go to the museum campus. It's spectacular.
Yolk is a good place because you can get pot roast sandwiches.
Yeah. And is Yolk, can you go to a Yolk that's not downtown? I think there's a couple,
There's
right?
one in the South Loop.
Yep. Okay, cool.
There's also a Yolk here in Indianapolis.
No way, nice.
Yeah, there's a Giordano's here, too. That doesn't count.
But it's important that you take the L downtown. I think it's crucial to be riding the L all around Chicago. That is quintessential. It is lovely. It will give you, it may be the best thing on the list to me. Then you're going to go to the Natural History Museum, which the Field Museum. It's spectacular. You're going to see my friend, the giant sloth, okay? Giant ground sloth. I believe it's Darwin's ground sloth. It's massive, and it's just this beautiful step back in time where you really get to, like, stand toe-to-toe with a giant ground sloth and be amazed. What else do you need to see in the field, would you say?
The Lions of Savo. My buddies, Ghost and Darkness.
Oh, they're beautiful.
They're the best. And when you see them, and remember, they are a third the size they were in life, that will mess you up.
Oh, God. I could spend the rest of this panel talking about the Field Museum and all you need to see in it, but the point is, go spend a lot of time there. Where to next, though? I think it has to end in maybe Delilah's.
Yes.
If you're a whiskey person at all.
Delilah's is my favorite bar in the city, which is a city not short of great bars. And thank God it's 12 miles from my house, or I'd never not be there. In between the Field and Delilah's, take the architectural boat tour.
Yes.
Again, basic, but it's actually the correct answer.
Yeah.
And your choice of where you want to eat, wherever you want to eat, whatever food you want, Chicago has among the best. If you want a pure Chicago experience, you could try any one of our regional pizza varietals. You could try Gampong wings, which were invented in Chicago by Chinese restaurateurs who had emigrated from Korea to Chicago and brought Korean-style chicken wings to Chicago and created Gampong wings. There are a number of other classic Chicago meals, but I think once you're riding the L, you want to go up to the north side anyway.
Yeah.
So I would do that. And, you know, whatever you do, if you can, you got a friend with a boat, you know, go out and be on the water at the last minute. Failing that, be in a penthouse. Ideally, you're there on a Wednesday or a Saturday when there's fireworks off Navy Pier, and you're looking at the most beautiful city in the world and the greatest city in the world. So there you are. That was your day.
Perfect.
Yes. What movie soundtrack should have played on my flight to Gen Con? I rode in a car to Gen Con.
And, you were the soundtrack.
And I were the soundtrack. I DJed that trip and many classics, but I think that the most soundtrack this time was a selection of Ozzy and Black Sabbath in memoriam of that great and seminal artist. It is very few people who invent an entire genre of anything. And Ozzy invented metal. And anyone who doesn't believe that is wrong. Darce, you actually flew, poor child.
I did. And I flew from a full week in the woods, in the remote woods of Canada, kind of east of Banff, at a kind of Burning Man-like music festival with lots of stages and strange woods with art installations sort of peppered throughout them and all sorts of discoveries. And I spent a full week there and came directly to Gen Con, which was a choice that I do not recommend. But I feel like there's some great soundtracks to, like, movies about, like, historical, like, music festivals, like, really iconic moments. I'm trying to think of what one would be a good fit, but it would probably be one of those, just great music, and also just attempting to become a human again. I'm curious, like, yeah, maybe some sort of movie about transformation, trying to get all the dust off of me and become a professional back again, Nindy.
Or a soundtrack of a movie about Altamont, because it ends in disaster. Yes, next. The question is, of the dubious historical personages that we have dealt with in the show, who would we invite to the role-playing group and what would we run for them? This is an opportunity for me to say that I would invite Aleister Crowley, but I would tell him the wrong place and time.
That's very good.
No, we want William Butler Yeats in the group because he's amazing and cool and has a vivid imagination, to say the least. Elizabeth Siddle, I think, would be really great. She's a little bit overdramatic, but theater kids have an important role in the gaming ecology. Let's see, who else have we done? I'm sticking kind of to folks that I think are in the same cultural tradition as us, because as much fun as Alexander the Paphlagonian might be, first of all, he's weird. He's messed up. He's the guy who shows up and you're like, did you do meth before you showed up at the game session?
Again?
But, again. So you know, my general approach is, you know, you bring in the sort of the fun British occultists, mm-hmm. not the bad British occultists. That's my general. Don't bring McGregor Mathers. He's going to rules lawyer you. Don't bring Crowley for obvious reasons. And, you know, try to keep it light. Try to keep it exciting. I say that the game that I would probably run for them would be Unknown Armies, because that's the game that lets that sort of creative magic flag fly while also being a great game to run and play. Darce, who do you want to play at the table with?
You know, I don't know if you've ever experienced this, but sometimes you have people you really admire or you like, and you want nothing more than to play a game with them, and sometimes they don't want to play a game with you, and I feel like I'm really hooked on someone who I would maybe get to go to one game and would not like it and would not like me, but I like them so much, I would love to play a game with them, right? This is Gertrude Bell, who... was one of my, I had a character who was sort of had Gertrude Bell's voice, you know, speaking to her and empowering her sort of adventuresome abilities. So I think she is, you know, sort of just a totally badass woman, going where no British woman was going at the time and interfacing with lots of people. I think she's really fascinated by like people's stories. So I think that's how I would lure her to my game night. But I think she is so serious, so non-nonsense. I don't think she likes women in any way or wants anything to do with them. And so I think we would not hit it off, but I would try desperately to get her to a game with me. I think I would have to, you know, loop her in that it would be fairly historical based, right? I think she would need to be very rooted in reality. She's a very practical woman. And I think she would leave my session halfway through, and I would, you know, I would take what I could get.
Okay. Next. So the question is, the notion of going to Canada and hiding in the wilderness for a week and being at a music festival, it's clearly a cover story. What's the real story? What was your real mission? Was it in Canada at all? Were you sent to Canada for some ulterior motive? And if you were actually in Canada, were you turned and sent here on some unsavory mission? Spill, Darcy.
Wow. I think I need to know what you would hypothesize I've been up to. I feel Darcy, like I've been clear about what I'm proposing.
All I know is that I said, when Darcy said, I'm going to go to this music festival in Banff and it's going to be great. And I said, great, send me pictures. And she said, sure. No pictures. No pictures on my phone. So all I know is her cover story failed at the first test.
Zero evidence. You know, I think I saw things at that festival that I cannot, you know, verify, I would say. So I think there was a lot going on there of a ritualistic nature, right? There were, you know, inexplicable, strange, drawings and little art pieces. At one point, Allie, my dear friend, picked up a phone and there was something like underneath this like, you know, there's a like rotary phone sort of thing. She picked it up and under the receiver is, you know, a little medallion. So I think that this might have been an elaborate effort to get a bunch of unsuspecting British and American and lots of Australian, for some reason, you know, happy-go-lucky music goers to disseminate and bring back enchanted objects, perhaps cursed, to their various respective communities. Never the wiser, people picked up these strange objects from the woods and would wear them. They were, you know, eating food handed to them. Everyone was very nice in Canada, you know. So everyone was very sharing with each other. I think this could have been a very effective place to disseminate some sort of pathogen or a series of cursed items or, you know. Yeah, I think that's how I would do it. So,
right. So some sort of Canadian Flybys Bohemian Grove situation is what's going on.
Point of order. Darcy is not telling everyone that she was recruited by the magic beaver.
Well, she had her choice between being recruited by the magic beaver or having the other signal Canadian animal interaction. But this is a family podcast, so look that up on the internet. And stuff having once again been talked about, it's time to thank our sponsors. Atlas Games, Belgrain Press, Flagbearer Games, Arc Dream, Dork Tower, and Pro Fantasy Software.
Music, as always, is by James Semple.
Audio editing by Rob Borges.
Support the show on Patreon at patreon.com/KenAndRobin.
Wear this show or drink it from a mug with Ken and Robin merch at tpublic.com/user/KenRobin.
Share a nature fact with the Rhino-rific latest design, Unicorn with a better armor class.
On X, I'm Kenneth Height.
And on Blue Sky, I'm Darcy L. Ross. BlueSky.social or however Blue Sky does it.
See you next time when Robin and I will once again talk about stuff. And a special round of applause for Darcy Ross. Oh. Parachuted in at the last minute. Who killed it? Oh.